Environmental emphasis. Iowa's Department of Natural Resources overseeing myriad issues from air quality to land stewardship has a new boss. A conversation with DNR Director Chuck Gipp on this edition of Iowa Press.
Funding for Iowa Press was provided by Friends, the Iowa Public Television Foundation.
Iowa banks know you want honest advice about how to best reach your financial goals. Whether it's financing and education, buying a new home, growing a business, or funding retirement, Iowa banks, Iowa values. MyIowaBank.com.
For decades, Iowa Press has brought you politicians and newsmakers from across Iowa and beyond. Celebrating 41 years of broadcast excellence on statewide Iowa Public Television. This is the Friday, July 6th edition of Iowa Press. Here is Dean Borg.
Iowa's Department of Natural Resources in some way or another is either monitoring or regulating nearly everything keeping us alive and active, from air and water quality to state parks, recreational trails, hunting and fishing, even monitoring and analyzing gasoline and other energy prices. Chuck Gipp is the DNR's new director, moving into that responsibility about a month ago. He's a dairy farmer from Decorah, but no stranger to state government, serving 17 years in the Iowa House of Representatives, some of that time leading House Majority Republicans, and then supervising soil conservation programs in Iowa's Department of Agriculture, and most recently as the DNR's deputy director before Governor Branstad appointed him director when Roger Landy resigned last month. Mr. Gipp, welcome back to Iowa Press. You've been here before as a state legislator.
Thank you very much. It's great to be back in this capacity.
And across the table, I think a couple of reporters that you know, Des Moines Register political columnist Kathy Obradovich and Radio Iowa News Director Kay Henderson.
Mr. Gipp, you're now the state's chief environmental regulator. If you could give us a brief assessment of Iowa's environment and then explain what you think your role is as that regulator.
Well, Iowa certainly has its challenges like any other state when it comes to the environment. And our job as the regulator is to ensure that we are in compliance with all federal environmental laws as well as the actions taken by the state legislature. And I think that we take that responsibility very seriously. How we do that, I think, is the nature of how we will lead the Department of Natural Resources. I happen to think, and not only in this job, but any other job that we've undertaken, the best thing we can do as far as environmental regulations is help people understand what the rules are. Get them in compliance and help them keep in compliance, because the vast majority of the people across the Iowa landscape want to know what the rules are, want to be in compliance, want to be environmentally friendly in whatever they do, and help them get in compliance rather than be the entity that sits back, allows people to get out of compliance, and then subject them to the fines.
So you see yourself as a teacher rather than a policeman?
We see us having to be both roles. I think it's very instrumental for environmental protection if we help people get in compliance. At the same time, if we have somebody that's a chronic violator of environmental regulations, that we get on them severely. Because in my past experience as a legislator, I know that vast majority of the rules and regulations and laws that are passed are to get at that chronic violator, the person that ignores the laws, the one that is not obeying the law out there, and the impact of that is that those new stringent laws and regulations impact the person that always follows the laws and rules. So get at the chronic violator at the same time. Be beneficial to the person that needs to know and want to know what the regulations are.
A lot of your fellow Republicans think that environmental regulations are job killers. Do you agree with that assessment at all? And if so, which is the most egregious?
Well, you need to understand, first and foremost, and I think this is something that the people don't understand and need to be reminded when it comes to the EPA as well as the Department of Natural Resources. We do not make the laws. We do not make the regulations. Congress passed the Clean Air Act. Congress passed the Clean Water Act. And in doing so, they also mandated the EPA and the DNR enforce the provisions of that. So we are put in a situation enforcing regulations that we didn't necessarily pass. And we will do that because we're charged to do that by the legislative body. So when it comes to job creation, once again, the governor has the goal to create jobs, make a much more environmentally friendly atmosphere for business to locate in Iowa and to stay in Iowa. And we can do that by helping them get in compliance, making sure they stay in compliance rather than do the gotcha type of attitude afterwards.
But are there regulations in Iowa where either because of the way the regulation is written or through enforcement that they have become overly burdensome for businesses?
There may be, but in the short term that I've been been there, let me tell you that we can be very helpful in getting people to get in compliance. I've been across Iowa and across the nation now in a collaborative effort with the Department of Economic Development in my previous capacity as deputy director, where we actually went along with Debbie Durham to recruitment opportunities. And it was important to do so because when you're recruiting a business, for example, they want to know what the requirements are going to be to locate in Iowa and what the enforcement action is going to be. So when I went along on a couple of these recruitment trips, when Debbie Durham introduced the fact that you have the deputy director of the Department of Natural Resources, the regulatory body, which they're going to have to apply for floodplain permits and construction permits, air quality permits, wastewater permits, water withdrawal permits, they immediately turned to look at me, say, what a great idea that we have the regulatory body and somebody representing that here today and helping recruit businesses.
But there's a reason for all of those
absolutely things.
And so what is the biggest threat to Iowa's environment that you see?
The biggest threat, basically, I think, is that if you're going to enjoy the outside, if you're going to enjoy being outdoors, Dean, you need to have quality water and quality air to do so. The other part of our agency provides for outdoor activities, whether it be hunting, fishing, biking, and those types of things. Yeah. In order for you to to enjoy that outdoor activity, you have to have clean water to swim in.
So where do we stand in all of that? What's the biggest threat right now to that utopia?
The utopia is that water. We as a state have our landscape used more than anybody and altered more than any other state in the nation, and that's a good thing because we're also responsible for providing the foodstuffs for people across the nation. So we're a very well used landscape across Iowa, which provides for environmental challenges. We think that we can have both. And if we help people get in compliance with conservation and water quality improvement practices, that we can have both. And so the challenge is getting collaboration and partnerships with local governments, with local people to help invest in the practices needed to improve water quality across the state.
The one thing that keeps you awake at night, though.
The one thing that keeps me awake at night, with my seniority and the things I've been subject to, there's not too much that actually keeps me awake at night anymore.
Mr. Gipp, I'd like to aim a few questions about lead shot your way and dove hunting.
Sure.
As you recall, the Natural Resources Commission, which is part of your agency, a governing body, voted to ban lead shot when people are hunting doves. The governor used his executive authority to allow dove hunters to use lead shot. Do you think lead shot poses an environmental hazard to the environment? And as a former legislator, are you comfortable with the governor executing that, I guess, override of what the agency did and what the legislature did?
Actually, let's clarify one thing, that Natural Resource Commission, the NRC, is not a part of the Department of Natural Resources. It's an appointed body, appointed by the governor or governors and confirmed by the Senate. And it's an oversight agency body, a commission of the Department of Natural Resources, not a part of the Department of Natural Resources. So what happened in that particular case is they went beyond what the legislative wishes were, and therefore the governor at that particular time, allowed a dove hunting rule to go into place that was passed by the legislature, signed by the governor, and the governor determined and the legislature determined that they overreached and put
the legislature didn't determine that. The House voted that way, but the Senate never took it up.
But the House did. The House did do
half
that.
Of the legislature.
Half the legislature.
Half of the legislature is fine for you as a former legislature.
But half of it did. But at the same time, because it went through the administrative rules process, they in turn had the opportunity to nullify that rule and to take a second look at it. They chose not to in the Senate, so the governor exercised his privilege. I think the important thing is that what the Department of Natural Resources is doing is following the will of the governor and the legislature this time, that we put a dove hunting season into place. And then the governor chose to do what, based on input that he had received, to nullify that, to give opportunity to use both lead shot and non-toxic shot.
Do you think lead shot poses an environmental threat?
There are some scientists that believe that it does. Others are not. It's controversial at best, and that eventually the science will win out on this issue.
Kathy?
Hunting and fishing is also a revenue producer here in Iowa. And as state budget funds become less over time, sometimes there's concerns maybe that the hunting and fishing license fees become maybe too much of the important revenue for the department. Like, might the department become over-reliant on hunting and fishing fees? Do you have the right balance right now?
We hope so, because what you've identified is the Department of Natural Resources funded by 140-some pluses sources of revenue. And it's about 10% general fund, about 35% federal funds, and the remainder is infrastructure dollars plus hunting and fishing license fees through the Fish and Wildlife Trust Fund. So we have become quite dependent on those types of activities. Which you also understand from your long tenure of covering the legislative process that a few years ago, the citizens of Iowa created the Fish and Wildlife Trust Fund to make it constitutionally protected, similar to the road fund. So your fishing and hunting license revenues and federal firearms taxes come into the Fish and Wildlife Trust Fund and are constitutionally protected and mandated to be funded and used towards enhancement of those types mm-hmm. of activities, hunting and fishing.
There's also a constitutional amendment passed that would allow a portion of any sales tax increase in the future to go toward natural resources programs. Is that something that you think is needed at this point?
The number of states have done that. Minnesota has done it. Missouri has done it. The people of Iowa did it overwhelmingly. The key to it is there is no money that came with that constitutional
right.
creation of that fund. It's determined whether the legislature goes along and increases the sales tax at some point in the future. If and when that happens, then 3/8 of 1 penny, or about $150 million, would come into that fund. The DNR and the Department of Agriculture and others would split that fund. There's a formula of what you would get for that, and it would go to enhance habitat and also for soil conservation and water quality improvements through soil conservation districts as well as the Department of Agriculture and Land Stewardship.
And would you be prepared to make a case that that's needed at this point?
At this point in time, that's going to be a decision made by the legislature, and because not all that money of a 1 cent increase would come to the to do that. That only 3/8 of 1 penny, the rest of it go to the rest of government for their needs.
What is your agency doing to manage the state's deer population? People who live in urban areas say, gosh, these deer are eating my landscaping. But people in your agency tell us that the deer population is managed appropriately.
I don't think they've said exactly that, Kay. I think they've said that we have made significant strides in reducing the deer population where it's needed. We also know that there are certain hot pockets yet that are out there. And so the deer management plan that's put together is based on observations, based on complaints from people. It's a whole lot of stakeholders out there, not just deer hunters, that are consulted, and it's observations and surveys that are taken to determine where those are. And based on that, we go county by county to determine how many antlerless licenses that are issued. And we are starting to see in some parts of our state where their hunters are complaining there's not sufficient deer. We have still places where there is too many deer out there. Because of that, and it was also an issue when I was in the legislature, we put together, in conjunction with the Department of Natural Resources, a deer management plan, which mm-hmm. then caused extensions of seasons, much more licenses that were available. We created what they call the HUSH program at that time. That's Help Stop Hunger, which then had $1 surcharge on licenses in order to help pay for the processing of deer. Because if you really wanted to go out and get all the licenses available, somebody could get 13 deer. Well, nobody can eat 13 deer in their family, or very few people can. So for those hunters to take the extra deer out there available, they created a HUSH program so they could donate this land to meat lockers and then therefore go to food pantries. It's been very successful in doing so. All in all, the deer population is under control in a lot of parts of our state. It still has hot pockets. Because of that, we have what we call the deer depredation program. If you can show that you have sufficient damage out there, you can appeal to our deer depredation biologists. They will come and note that, and you can get depredation licenses to take care of those excess deer population. In addition, you have shooting permits, so there's multiple opportunities to continue to reduce the deer population.
Let's talk about the state parks for a minute. Would you like to see a state park user fee to give you money to take care of the state parks?
Dean, we have 85 great state parks in the state, and it's always a task in order to keep those to the way the public wants to do those. It's a challenge for our people because we've lost revenues, and when you reduce the general fund, that's the first part of the state DNR budget that gets its first.
Should I pay then to go to the park?
Actually, I don't. The legislature adopted a state park user fee at one point in time, but it was rescinded after about a year and a half because our staff was spending an inordinate amount of time to determine whether or not somebody at a park pass rather than doing the things they need to do. Mm-hmm. The other thing about our state parks you observe, unlike a lot of state parks across the United States, is that we have multiple entrances into the state park.
Yeah.
In order to allow for that state park fee to be effective, you would have to have somebody at a certified gate in order to get into it.
So to say you'd like to have the money, you'd like to have a fee, but you don't know how to implement it.
It'd be very difficult to implement that. And right now, I think there's other alternatives until that would be addressed. I'm not going to be an advocate for a state park user fee. I think there's other opportunities for Iowans to participate. More money coming from the general fund because it's a societal benefit of having a great state park system. So if we need more money, we'll simply have to go to the legislature and ask for it.
And how likely is that? They have been cutting. Legislature has been kind of hostile to the
DNR.
I
think that we can change it around. One of the reasons I was brought on board is because of my relationship and past relationship with the legislative process. I understand and appreciate the legislative process, so I can go to them with some credibility on both sides of the aisle to plead the case that if you want a great state park system, you're going to have to help pay for it. The other thing the governor's doing and encouraging, and we're also encouraging as a department, is the Parks Foundation. We are instituting a program with the Parks Foundation to have localities get ownership of their state park. If you're within a state, 50 miles of state park, it's an economic benefit to that particular region of the country. And a perfect example is just what happened over in Maquoketa, Iowa, with Maquoketa State Caves. Maquoketa State Caves, of course, has the bats. And the bats are being threatened by what they call white nose fungus that's coming from the east. In order to keep that from happening or slow that progress in infecting those bats in Maquoketa State Cave, we proposed limiting access to that. Only then did the city of Maquoketa and the surrounding region come to the legislature saying, and the DNR, and say, hey, this is a great economic engine for this area. They decided to take ownership of that park, and then with their legislators appealing to the DNR, we worked out an agreement to allow limited access to the state park. But it was ironic that it took the potential closing that state park or limiting the access to have that community to gain ownership. And so that's what we're trying to encourage. We know that we have to, if we want a state park, we want state facilities, that localities are going to have to take more ownership of those state parks.
And how are you going to, you're actively encouraging that, or is this the first
time? Parks Foundation is encouraging that. Okay. And it's a public-private partnership that we're under the Brandt administration that Governor Brandt said is encouraging, is to let's take ownership of these parks, support this Park Foundation concept so that we can help provide the infrastructure and the maintenance care. We're still going to have to provide the personnel to manage those volunteers in that state park.
A couple of decades ago, the legislature created what's called the Resource Enhancement and Protection Program, REAP. It's never been fully funded in the parlance of the legislature. Do you believe that the state should commit more resources to resource enhancement and protection projects, water quality, soil conservation?
Understand, Kay, with my long experience in the legislature, I always know that there was always $3 worth of asking for every dollar that was available, no matter whether there was a lot of money or little money. So there's always people that were going to be asking. There's always agencies that could say we could do more if we had more dollars to do that. We are just appreciative of the action of the legislature in funding the REAP program and the way it's funded right now. If they choose to put more money in, that we certainly can provide uses for that. And REAP doesn't just come to the Department of Natural Resources. It also benefits county conservation, water quality improvement through the Division of Soil Conservation, and other entities participate in that program.
Just the news today that FEMA, Federal Emergency Management Agency, has reversed its decision on restoration of Lake Delhi up in northeastern Iowa. 2 years ago this week, it flooded out, and that lake was destroyed. One of the big controversies, though, is about the lack right now of very much public access to that lake. Mostly it's private homeowners who have access to that lake. Is that something that you would make a priority for DNR to push for more public access?
Well, it's absolutely is going to be it. And one of the conditions, the appropriation of the $5 million that would come from the Rebuild Iowa Infrastructure Fund, or once again gambling profits, is that they have to provide a plan to the legislature by December 31st of this year and how they're going to improve public access, how they're going to deal with the wastewater issues of the homes that are around there so that it doesn't become an environmental issue with the lake itself, and how they're going to impact the water withdrawal areas. There's also a provision in the code that requires a fish passage. In other words, a way to get around that dam for fish to move upstream. It's also a code requirement. So you can understand that my position as director is to make sure, as our mission is to help enhance the natural resource, that any restoration of Lake Delhi and the dam would have to make sure that we had public access to that lake.
Is there going to be any state money involved in that project?
There is $5 million of state money. It's estimated at $17.5 million project, but with $5 million of close, you're getting close to 20% of that. Therefore, because it's public money, public should have access to that rather than simply the homeowners that's around
that lake. Given all of the priorities that you've just listed with DNR, I mean, is that one really worthy of $5 million of state money?
The legislature passed that appropriation to Lake Delhi, and the governor signed that, and therefore that money was charged the DNR to make sure that it goes to that effort with the local money. So we will do what we are charged to do. At the same time, as you indicate, we are concerned about the public access. That's one thing we as an agency will insist on, public access and also wastewater improvements in that lake.
Let's shift to Honey Creek State Park Resort. Is that an albatross that should be unloaded? Should it be sold?
We don't believe so. I also was in the legislature when that was authorized, and it originally was supposed to be look like Mahoney State Park, a destination park just across from in Omaha. And it was chosen to go down to Lake Rathbun. Those of us who are also involved saw that Southern Iowa at that particular time wasn't able to benefit much from the Vision Iowa program, which allowed for community attractions across the Iowa landscape, and that was their opportunity to do that.
But it's had trouble making money.
It has had trouble making money. Part of that is because the hospitality industry at the same time has been trouble making money. It fell on hard times. It had tremendous flooding down there that made it inaccessible. It had some damage at that particular time. And it all came into being kind of in a perfect storm of when it was difficult for the hospitality industry. What I can tell you right now, that it is making money it is making money above it. It is not making enough money to pay off the bonded indebtedness at this time. And so we as a state have got to quit arguing about how we got there. Understand it is a debt of the state, and we're going to have to retire that debt because it now is the state government's debt.
But you'd like to keep it under state ownership?
We would like to keep, at this point in time, unless there's somebody that comes along and is willing to pay what the worth of that facility is, we're not going to sell it to at 10 cents on a dollar. That would be foolish. The other thing that people need to know about Honey Creek State Park, while the economy in Iowa was going down and therefore sales tax collection in a number of counties was also falling, Wayne and Appanoose County, which is located next to Honey Creek State Park, their sales tax collection went up. So what that indicates, the only thing that had changed for the sales tax collection part was the fact that Honey Creek State Park was there, and there was a number of people coming to Honey Creek State Park to enjoy those great facilities down there.
You alluded to water quality in Iowa earlier being a prime concern of yours. Iowa's listed, you often hear radio ads that Iowa has the poorest water quality or among the poorest water quality in the nation. Is that justified? Is Iowa taking a hit on that, or is it justified?
We have a very well-used landscape because of our agriculture practices and the way we use our landscape, not just agriculture, but point source as well. We have 960 incorporated communities in the state that all contribute to some of that. Some of them have upgraded waste treatment plants, others do not. All in all, we have challenges out there, and we also have a lot of water bodies in the state. There's a reason that Iowa's sixth in the nation number of bridges, even though they were not the largest state, because we have a lot of water bodies out there. What people need to know is just because we have impaired waters doesn't mean it's very unhealthy for you, because the vast majority of the impairments of these water bodies are caused by sediment. So what we are doing, along with our conservation practice like Division of Soil Conservation and Iowa Department of Agriculture, County Conservation, Natural Resource Conservation Commission, our federal partners, is instituting soil conservation practice and water quality improvement. And so I think with the voluntary system we have that we are making progress. I think also what people need to know, there has been significant progress. We have more progress, obviously, and challenges to go forward, but we have made progress. At one time, we had only three stream segments in Iowa that produced naturally reproduced trout. We now have 30-plus stream segments in Iowa that naturally reproduce trout. So that's a good news story that's out there that very few people know about.
Will the hot weather and dry weather possibly cause some more problems?
Absolutely it will, because once you have hot, warm weather, you have streams that have less water flowing through it, and therefore you have oxygenation problems out there. So you might have more fish kills simply because the warm water. The warm water is going to be a challenge to certain species of fish. because a lot of our species, like trout, like cooler water. So the warmer it gets, the more challenge you have to some of those and the stress it will put on them.
Another concern about water quality, of course, is confinement livestock operations. And there have been concerns raised in the past year about the level of staffing that you have at DNR to oversee permitting and enforcement of the livestock program in Iowa. What's the status of that now? And can you assure people that there is adequate oversight of that program?
For one, the legislature this year responded to that request and provided us more money to do more livestock regulation. And previously, once again, having been from the legislature, that we passed a provision out there that actually put a per-head tax on the largest units, and that money was to go towards livestock confinement facility enforcement. And that was done at that particular time. Unfortunately, because of budget challenges, then money was taken away that used to be funded from the general fund to support that effort. So it was kind of a replacement rather than adding on to at that particular time because of budget challenges we had. As far as the livestock industry itself, I can tell you from being in the livestock industry and growing livestock that what we have now today when it comes to confinement facilities probably is more environmentally friendly to water quality than ever been done in the history of the state. Because there's always, as I often say, somewhat indignantly, there's always been liquid in livestock manure. It's only recently we started to collect it with livestock. Before those of us, before the equipment was out there, you had flat feeding floors. We had a tremendous livestock population. That runoff then was runoff, which went to our streams and rivers. So we are collecting it now. That causes challenges, though. Because once you collect that manure, you have an air quality issue because it not only does it stink, it reeks. It used to stink out there, but now it reeks because of this. So that's why the regulations are in place. The legislature responded with actually having regulations in place because of the large livestock operations to put those in place.
The day you were appointed, critics of the agency suggested you were in the bag for livestock because of your previous experience as a farmer. Are you a vigilant regulator of the livestock industry?
Well, what people need to know, and it's like my predecessor Roger Landy used to say, everybody's entitled to their opinion, but they're not entitled to their own facts. And as you know from my legislative career, that I was very instrumental in a lot of the environmental regulations that are in place today. And I didn't get involved in politics because I, with a physical education degree, because I want to be in politics. I got involved in politics because of poorly regulated landfill next to my farm. And so because of that, I was very involved with a lot of the environmental regulations placed today. And so to me, to be attacked, to be unfriendly to the environment is really ironic.
What would you like, looking at all these challenges that you've got ahead of you, what would you like your legacy to be at the DNR? When you're finished?
My legacy at the DNR, that we've improved the opportunity for Iowans to enjoy the outdoors, that we provided those opportunities, because if we want to go with the governor's goals to make us the healthiest state, we're the agency that actually provides that opportunity. We're the ones that allow people to get away from the TV and off the couch and outside to enjoy the outdoors. In order to do that, you have to make sure we also have clean lakes and rivers and air to breathe to do that. And so my legacy is let's continue to work with Iowans, because the vast majority of Iowans are very willing, if they know what the information is, know what the practices are, know what the rules are, they will join us in that effort to make Iowa not only the healthiest state, but also the most environmentally friendly.
Thanks for being with us today.
Thank you for allowing me.
Next week on Iowa Press, State Auditor Republican David Vaught and State Treasurer Democrat Michael Fitzgerald will be talking money and accountability next week. Auditor Vaught and Treasurer at the usual time, 7:30 Friday night, and you can see the show again Sunday at noon. I'm Dean Borg, and thanks for joining us today.
Funding for Iowa Press was provided by Friends, the Iowa Public Television Foundation.
Support comes from the Iowa Bankers Association. Iowa banks work with you to offer products and advice for financing an education, buying a new home, growing a business, or funding retirement. Iowa banks, Iowa values. MyIowaBank.com.